Hello, welcome to the Box Room Podcast. My name's Marty.
Hello, my name is Jen.
Why are we here, Jen?
We used to do a podcast called the Box Room Podcast 100 years ago, and we've decided to do it again in lockdown, but to do sort of shorter, more streamlined versions of it. So we are taking it in turns to talk about genres that we like. So Marty's turn is in this episode, and he's talking about time travel and has chosen a time travel film for us to watch and then talk about.
And it's not Time Cop.
It's not Time Cop, much to my disappointment.
My film of choice today is The History of Time Travel, which is a low-budget indie film, which is currently streaming on Amazon Prime. And I think it is well worth a watch, in my humble opinion. But don't just take my word for it. Did you enjoy it, General?
Yes, I thought it was quite good. It's diverting, and it's only an hour and 12 minutes long.
Yeah, so that's not much out of your life. You don't have to worry too much about getting that back, because it's not much at all.
No, brilliant. So why did you choose? Because you watched this before me, didn't you? You watched it independently, possibly during one of your many nights of not sleeping properly. And decided that you wanted to include it in your part of this season of The Box Room.
I did, yeah, because the more I thought about it, the more I figured that it is actually worthy of, like, repeat viewings, definitely, but trying to rope other people into watching it as well, because it embraces pretty much everything about time travel that I like in a format that is an unusual choice for me. It's not a format that I would necessarily have picked normally as something I'd go for generally, but there's something about it that, like, really kind of drew me in and made it work. And they didn't have a budget, so they utilized what they had in such a fantastically clever, low-key way that really, really works, and I cannot recommend it enough.
Because you could have chosen a lot of different very well-known time travel films, obviously, and so you've decided to go with a smaller one that people might not have heard of, so that it can get a bit more kind of more eyeballs watching it, hopefully.
Absolutely, at least, three listeners that we've got now, is it?
Like a whole three.
A handful of listeners.
We would have four, but my mum can't figure out how to play it.
She'll hear this.
Hi, Mum.
Hi, Mum.
Love you. Yeah, hopefully we figured out how to get it to play on your Kindle device by now. So here it endeth the personal message to my mum. Yeah, so do you want to explain what the film's about?
Yeah, the history
The clue is in the title, really.
The History of Time Travel, yeah. The History of Time Travel is a 2014 sci-fi mock documentary movie written and directed by Ricky Kennedy, who I don't think many people would have heard of. He's like a new up-and-coming person who wrote the screenplay, directed it, did everything.
Wrote the theme tune, sang the theme tune.
Absolutely. You can catch him as at RNKFanArt on Twitter.
FanArt?
Yeah.
Does he do fan art?
Go and check out his Twitter account and find out.
I can't, because my phone's charging.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
But yeah, the film is about the history behind the invention of time travel, and it's framed as a network TV documentary on the subject. It's asking kind of what would happen if one family invented and used time travel to alter their own family's history, and would anyone notice? It's also a story of what if the world powers also got involved with this, which is where it kind of gets confusing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you say, it's like I've said before, it does benefit from repeat viewing. There's always something new you'll spot. And the story is kind of ever-changing. Mm. And like evolving, so at any given point you spot a change, that's the new normal. So you'd have to imagine the whole documentary was based in that reality up till then.
Yeah, but so the format of it is that it's a documentary, so you've got your kind of classic talking heads interviews on it with a variety of different experts, and they are telling the story of these people who the dad invented a time machine, and the sons also became involved in it, and it's all about their complicated family history and them trying to save you know, family members or family members' relationships so that their lives turn out better, basically. So you have people like, I think one of them is a science fiction writer who's commenting on it.
Yeah.
One of them is a, actually forgotten what he is, a scientist?
Yeah,
of some sort. Well, he sits next to some moon rock, so I assume he is a astrophysicist. Yeah, I want to say
big old military guy there as well.
Yes, who has a hilarious voice. And there is also another guy who I assume is also a scientist.
But the thing is, it doesn't matter what they start out as. Because as it goes on, you know, they're kind of, their job titles can change, you know, their locations can change, that whole background behind them changes all the time, and you've got to kind of like keep up as the story changes. So do the talking heads discussing the whole story.
Yeah. So as the family are fucking about with time, so you're seeing the consequences of it in the documentary itself by what's going on in the background and what's happened to the people who are talking about the story. So it's very kind of loopy, I want to say. And yeah, as you said, it benefits from watching it more than once because you can pick up the ways that it changes.
And it's always a joy when you pick up a new change. There's this kind of,
yes,
your little achievement.
Yeah, and I quite like the documentary format of it, actually, because I quite, you know, what I'm like with documentaries, so I quite, you know,
it's in your true crime
documentary obsession. And I thought that the use of things like stock footage and sort of obviously mocked up vintage photographs and things like that were done really well. Also, I might be reading too much into this, but I liked that one of the scientist guys appears to be dressed like H.G. Wells with his waistcoat and his pocket watch.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, in front of a blackboard. He could be out of the time machine. And the other scientist guy was wearing a suit with Converse, which says to me, David Tennant's doctor. So
yeah, it must be little subtle nods in.
I like that sort of thing, yeah. I feel like they're really thinking about it.
There's a code in there somewhere. There's a group of numbers that correspond to the letters of the alphabet. And it spells out THX1138.
Oh, that's so nerdy.
I know.
What numbers? Where is this?
I can't remember now. I'll have to find out and put it in the notes or something. But there's so many things to watch out for, so many nerdy little things like that, little Easter eggs that you can spot.
Yeah, clearly made by nerds.
For nerds.
Yeah. And I think even like a bigger, nerdier thing than that is that the time machine itself was initially made, like at one point was made out of an Atari.
It was. It looks like two VHSs stuck together.
Yeah. And it was the shonkiest looking time machine. Do you think, like, in the many various time machines that we've seen, where do you think it ranks in terms of shonkiness?
The shonky level is well up there.
Yeah.
I think that's a 10.
It's not a DeLorean, is it? And it's not.
No, it's not Swish.
Not H.G. Wells' spinny disc.
Yeah, it's beautiful Victorian art piece.
Yeah, it's obviously steampunk, crazy, wet dream thing. Should I think of other time machines?
So the phone box.
Bill and Ted's phone box, yeah.
The police box.
The TARDIS, yeah. The hot tub from Hot Tub Time Machine?
The time tunnel.
Time tunnel. Was that... I see, I haven't seen the time tunnel stuff, so I don't know what that looked like.
Basically the tunnel.
A tunnel, okay.
Yeah, a big swirly tunnel, bit of sort of like, if you imagine the Stargate that was like designed for a 60s TV show.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I don't know if I've done that justice.
I don't know. I mean, perhaps if I was keener on Stargate, I'd be more impressed. And I also wondered if, because the project... The time travel project was referred to as the Indiana Project, which initially I was like, oh, Indiana Jones, okay. Or then I thought maybe it's actually a reference to the Philadelphia experiment, you know, because it sounds like the same kind of thing.
Yeah, again, that could well be. Yeah, I didn't spot that. Nice one.
Oh, yeah, talking about the Atari time machine, I think a bit later that one of the, when they're kind of getting into the 90s and in the sort of timeline within the story, the time machine starts to look like it might have been made out of other bits and bobs, including what I was convinced was a PlayStation Move remote thing.
Yeah, I don't doubt it at all. We're trying to look at images of it to see what it looks like. It's just a bit of a mess, isn't it?
And at some point he straps it on his back, doesn't he? So it's like a proton pack.
Yeah, that's another good reference. Yeah. Well done.
Oh, I know.
See how many you can spot.
But what struck me about it, actually, which I think is often the case with time travel films, is that it's about a kind of personal story. You know, it's not so much about science, it's more about people trying to fix mistakes that they can't fix, which I think is like a recurring theme with time travel movies, isn't it? That's often what it comes down to, is people trying to fix a thing that went wrong and then finding that they can't fix it.
Yeah, it's very basically to start with, that the scientist who initially worked on it, furiously worked on it after his wife died, to try and go back in time and sort his shit out. It's like he was so involved with the project, he kind of basically put his family to one side.
And fucked everything up.
Absolutely. And his wife died of polio. And he blamed himself because, like, he'd been neglecting them so terribly.
What a
time. So then he threw himself into the work even more than he had before in order to go back.
Yeah.
And, you know, put things right what once went wrong.
Indeed. See, exactly. That's exactly, you know, Quantum Leap is entirely about trying to fix mistakes, isn't it? So that's kind of your core time travel cheesy TV series. Was Quantum Leap the 80s? I suppose it was. Yeah. 80s and early 90s?
Or? Yeah, I think so. Sure. Yeah.
But yes, I have to admit that although I have read The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, my main basis of reference for The Time Machine is the Guy Pearce film that nobody went to see.
I did.
Apart from us, separately. Because this was in the BS times before Cinati. So we must have seen it at separate cinemas and stuff. But that's my main reference for The Time Machine, which I really liked. And of course, in that, he does spend an obsessive amount of time trying to stop his fiance from being run over.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Things like you said in a previous episode, you can't go back and change something, because if you change something, there's no reason to go back.
Yeah. Whereas I guess what they're saying, especially with The Time Machine with the Guy Pearce version, is that time corrects itself. Mm. So you can try and change it, but ultimately she died in a number of hilarious ways and, you know, in the end. And then doesn't he have a strop and accidentally send himself really distantly into the future? That's what happens, isn't it? Yeah.
It's something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like that film.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, I
like it's a favourite.
Guy Pearce, I could pretty much watch in everything. So, is it Jeremy Irons in that? Who's like the chief Morlock or something? That's wild.
It's a bit nuts.
Mm. I'm sure I told you this before, but because I had to read the H.G. Wells book for work reasons, I did like all this research into it, and there are like tons and tons of sequels to The Time Machine written by like everyone. Mm. Like everyone's had a pop at it.
Isn't Stephen Baxter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he might have done the official ones.
That's right, yeah.
But yeah, there's all sorts of crazy stuff where like he goes back again and marries an Eloy and all this stuff. It's like, geez, they're like children. You weirdo.
The age difference.
It's very strange. Yeah, sorry, I've gone completely off the point there.
It don't matter.
But that's the point of the podcast.
That's us.
Yeah, so that's often the case with time travel films, isn't it? It's about resolving a personal problem that ultimately you can't.
Yeah, they were mucking it up, you know, enough on their own. But when governments got involved, that's when it got tricky. And you've got, you know, Russia and the CIA, which kicked off like a temporal Cold War.
Yeah, it's probably around that point that I stopped understanding what was going on, I think. But I did really like the idea of a temporal Cold War. Is very cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I loved the fact that they've essentially lost the time machine to the Russians, and Russia was just fucking about, like fucking them around with it and being like, oh, you think you're going to go to the moon, but no, we've gone to the moon before you, you know, or, you know, we're sending Sputnik and all this stuff.
Yeah. One of the things to look out for in the background is on the globe.
Oh, the changing map.
The changing territories, yeah. Yeah,
I liked that. So, like, at one point, obviously at the beginning it's normal looking, or what we would think of as normal.
Yeah.
And then a bit later on, everything gets red. Yeah. Which is really clever.
Great stuff.
Yes. It is the sort of... It's the sort of film that rewards watching closely.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Also, I really... I'm not going to just name all the things that I liked in the background, because that would spoil it for people. But... there's a bit where the military guy has different photographs on his wall where he's being spoken to, and they change as well, which is quite fun.
Yeah. So watch out for them.
I think it does quite a good, you know, as you say, it does a good job of playing around with time travel tropes.
Yeah, I think it's got them all in there at some point, I think.
So do you feel like it holds up well against other time travel films?
I think it holds up really well. It's not a spectacle blockbuster. It's not, you know, Back to the Future with cars getting zapped by lightning and leaving fire trails and
not Time Cop.
Big action. Yeah, there's no big action sequences. There's no Jean-Claude Van Damme's
kicking people in the face.
Yeah.
Maybe it could have done with a bit more of that, you know. I almost wish that they'd pushed it a bit further than they did. You know, it could have gone really weird with the whole idea of changing timelines. I mean, there could be really massive differences. And there has got one guy who's talking at the beginning who then disappears and becomes a young woman talking.
Yeah, there was a bit of it. I think that's because there was something in the story which made him actually die. So they're obviously interviewing someone else.
Yeah.
From that department or whatever, because that actual person was dead before the documentary started. Yeah. At that point.
Yeah. So I just feel like they could have pushed that even further. You know, you could have had... You know, is it that crazy episode of... Is it the Treehouse of Horror episode of The Simpsons where Homer is fucking about with time and he keeps going back trying to get to his own, you know, to a semblance of time that... Or a semblance of his world that makes sense. And he can't... Every time he goes back, it's a more ridiculous version. Like, they're all lizard people or... God, I can't remember any examples apart from the fact that the very last one, there's something wrong and he leaves. And then a second later, you see that it's raining donuts outside.
That's right.
So, yeah, I would have liked it to have gone even weirder. But then, as you say, it's a small independent film, so they probably didn't have the budget for people to be suddenly mushroom people or, you know...
Yeah, this could be a springboard, though, if like some money took this up and turned it into a series, you know, a really decent TV series or, you know, some proper blockbuster films. Because there is a lot to unpack. There's a lot that could be explored in this. But I think for what it is, which is a documentary, as documentaries are, It's perfect. It's the perfect form. So overall, what is your... How many TikToks out of 10?
TikToks?
Yeah, it's time travel.
Okay. I would... Out of 10, did you say?
Yeah.
I would probably say I would give it a 7.
Okay. Where does it lose points?
It's just very short. And, you know, it has the, I guess, restrictions of a small budget film. But I really enjoyed it and I think it's, you know, huge fun and everything. But if I'm comparing it to other well-known time travel films such as, you know, Terminator or Bill and Ted or Lego Movie 2...
Yeah.
Then it probably, you know, it's not right up there in the 9s and 10s for me.
That's fair enough. I think I'd give it an 8 because I probably like it a bit more than you. It gives me a bit of a think. It made me have a bit of a ponder. And it's like, you know, I said, it's got all the time travel things I like in it.
Yeah. Have you read the Stephen King book about the Kennedy assassination and time travel?
No.
Ah, oh, maybe you should. Did we watch the TV series?
I think so.
Yeah. And obviously that's about a guy who discovers a way of travelling back in time to the 60s. And he decides to stop the JFK assassination, basically. And it's about the... Well, a lot of it is about dancing, weirdly. About people learning to dance. I mean, it's a long book. And eventually it does get round to the consequences of what happens when you dick about with the timeline. But that's like a good example of that. I enjoyed that.
Is the book better?
Yes.
Are you sure?
I was just trying to remember how I felt about the TV series, and all I can remember, I think, is that James Franco is in it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's it. That's all I remember. I mean, I really like Stephen King's chunky books, you know, like the... I mean, he's always written really huge books, but I know a lot of people sort of struggle with the general size and meanderingness of some of his books, but I quite like that because you get really lost in the characters and the sort of minutiae of their lives and stuff. So I enjoyed it, but the TV series is probably a more streamlined version of the story.
Cool, something I'd enjoy.
Yes.
Are there any other time... You've mentioned a few time travel films there. Which time travel films would you like to sit down and watch if given the choice? Like right now, pick three.
Do you know what? I was thinking about Triangle. Do you remember that?
Triangle?
Triangle. I always want to sing... is it Barry Manilow?
Can we use a triangle?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen it. I'm certain that you've seen it. And it's another kind of smaller independent film about a ship with people trapped on it and there's like a time loop. Does this ring any bells?
Yeah.
And there's no hope of me explaining the actual plot, but essentially they're all on like a kind of cruise ship and they are stuck in a kind of looping timeline and there's various iterations of everyone, and there's some really great scary and unnerving kind of shots in the film. So there's like one bit where someone turns a corner and sees the same dead body but heaped on top of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of the same dead person.
Yeah, I know this now. Yeah,
because it's they're caught doing the same thing over and over again. And yeah, it's a tremendous film and I feel like nobody's heard of it, you know, because it's just not like a big budget action movie star kind of film. But in terms of using time travel to tell a horror story, I think it's really good. So I would watch that. Is it my top three time travel films now? I think you have to leave Back to the Future out of the equation because it's, you know.
That's why we're not covering it in this, because it's my favourite films. So that's my top three.
Yeah, that's cheating. You have to have an extra top three because Back to the Future doesn't really count because it's like it's three perfect films essentially about time travel and it's like its own little group. That's my... I've just decided that. So, no, you can't even count it as one.
No, I've got to. that's what I would watch at a drop of a hat. Time Bandits.
Oh, yeah. See, I feel like I've missed the boat slightly with Time Bandits because I never liked it as much as everyone else.
Oh, that's a shame.
But you liked it, did you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the I'm saluting that one.
Okay. The other time travel films that I really like. So, obviously, you have to talk about Terminator, I suppose. Do you prefer Terminator or Terminator 2? Terminator 2, yeah, it's the better one, isn't it? And we don't talk about all the others.
No, there aren't any.
Do you like any of the other Terminator films?
I don't think I do. I've watched them, yeah, but they're not all that. They peaked with Terminator 2. It was a lovely concept, the first film, and it went down very well. I enjoyed that. And the second film was fantastic. What a great sequel.
Yes, I mean, my one of the best things about those two films, I think, is that in the first film, obviously Sarah Connor is kind of like just your average lady trying to, you know, make her way in the world with her massive perm and everything. And she kind of reacts like you would if, you know, this machine from the future decided you have to die and there's this other guy who turns up and all that. You know, she's very like, what the fuck is going on? And but by the second film, obviously Sarah Connor has become a different person because of the impact of what happened in the first film. So I really like that mad character progress. And obviously Sarah Connor in the second film becomes this really iconic female character in cinema. And you get the Terminator, Arnie's Terminator, being a good guy, which is kind of brilliant.
Yeah, it's quite sweet.
Yeah. And the guy with the liquid metal guy, who is genuinely quite scary. In fact, that whole the whole film still holds up as being scary and threatening, I think.
Yeah, you know. I reckon so.
Because I always think about that scene where someone's on the phone and then they get, like, impaled through the head with a, you know, the spiky thing.
Yeah,
and that's fucked up. And actually, Terminator 2 contains one of the scenes that really traumatised me as a child.
Is it the nuclear bomb
bit? Yes, it was the nuclear bomb bit. Fuck's sake.
That was hard.
The skeletons holding onto the fence, on fire. What the fuck? See, I feel like younger people younger than us probably didn't grow up hearing about nuclear war as much as we did. And I think I was probably on the tail end of that, you know. I think they stopped talking about it.
I think we got the brunt of it.
Yeah. Well, you certainly did, and then my age group got the tail end of that, and I think they've stopped talking about it so much now. But I remember, like, history lessons where my history teacher was like, if there's a nuclear war, you want the bomb to land on your head because then you're dead and you don't have to deal with all of it. And I was like, wow, this is a exciting conversation for like 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon in history. You mad woman.
Wow. How to fuck up a class full of children.
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely kind of really fixated on it, as a lot of our age group probably did. Because we were doing the Cuban Missile Crisis at the time. So there was that whole, you know, mutually assured destruction thing. Fun times.
Wow, yeah.
So, yeah, that scene in Terminator 2 fucked me up.
Well, we're kind of running out of time, actually. So we'd like to talk about loads more time travel stuff, but we're streamlined now because we're adult podcasters. Not adult, but don't be mucky.
Oh, dirty podcasters.
Not dirty podcasters.
No. Yeah, we're trying to keep the podcast to a reasonable length rather than like the 3 hours it used to be. Next episode, we're asking people to choose, aren't we?
Yeah, we've thrown it open.
So time travel or
folk horror.
Any horror movie, I'd be up for that. So yeah, if you've got any suggestions, you can obviously at us on Twitter. I'm at Senny Dreadful on Twitter.
And I'm at Doug Strider.
Give us a shout if there's anything you want us to see.
We'll give it a go.
Yeah, and then we'll see. And if nobody replies at all, I've decided that we're going to do teen movies instead.
Teen movies?
Yep. It's all an excuse so that I can make you watch like Mean Girls and Clueless. And then Grease again. And then Ferris Bueller's Day Off again.
Well, a bit of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, out of that list, that's the only one.
And we can watch Booksmart again.
That was quite good, actually.
That was good, yeah. That's what's going to happen if you don't tell us what film to watch next. So.
Do you want that to happen?
I don't know if you want... Do you? I mean, I want it to happen, but...
Don't let her win.
So, yeah, get in touch with any film suggestions. And is there anything else you want to plug in the last couple of minutes of the cast?
There's a new podcast called Jeb's Week.
Oh, yeah.
Which is well worth listening. You can find that on Spotify as well. Jeb's Week. And it's a little 15-minute podcast covering the most important news of that particular week.
I feel like you've missed the most important thing about... the podcast.
What's that, Jennifer?
It's that Jeb is a teddy bear.
Oh my God. What a unique selling point.
Who works in the newsagents now.
He does. He's looking after his Uncle Tony's newsagents because Uncle Tony has mysteriously vanished.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going over all the news of the week and all the local gossip and just getting by. It's 15 minutes, under 15 minutes, of pure gold.
Yes, and I have a guest voice in it, so obviously worth listening to.
Just for that.
For like one line.
Second.
Yeah. Anything else?
That's pretty much it. I'm still doing the same old stuff I normally do, so not worth going over old ground.
Okay, well, I'm going to go over old ground because I have a book to promote.
What's it called?
Oh, it's called Dog Rose Dirt, and it's out from HarperCollins in July.
Fantastic.
It's a serial killer thriller. Very murdery and dark. Otherwise, what have I been doing? Oh, we've been watching Mad Men from the beginning.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, we missed it out on the first round of
like 10 years ago when it was out. Yeah. Which I'm enjoying a lot. I feel like I'm like more emotionally invested in it than I realised or that I thought that I would be, because Peggy obviously is this female character in it who's a secretary, and then she gets, you know, into copywriting in this very male-dominated business. And of course, I went from working in customer service at a place that I used to work, and then eventually kind of got into doing copywriting. So now I'm like, I'm taking everything incredibly personally. So it's like, come on, Peggy. Yeah. Tell him to fuck off. Throw him out of a window. Drown him in his own piss. You know, come on. Yeah, so I guess that's the main thing. So either pre-order my book or watch Mad Men if you haven't already watched it. It's on Amazon.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Let's call it a day.
Okay.
Thanks very much for listening. I've been Marty.
And I'm Jen Still. Bye.
Cheers,
bye.
Come with us. Come with us. We're gonna change the world. You'll be amazed. So full of praise. When we rearrange your world.
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.